Well, again, we have a lesson that doesn't really apply to any of you in here, okay? But it's in the Bible, so it has value. It is worthwhile to look at it. The sluggard and the scoffer. Now, when I talked about Proverbs, we talked about the path upward and downward. Upward is to gain knowledge, understanding, and wisdom. We tend to have three illustrations of individuals, which is a downward path. The fool, and then you have the sluggard, and then you have the scoffer. If you remember, we did the fool last week, and what we recognized is clearly that the fool does not accept God's order in the world. The first line of a fool is he rejects the existence of God. He just simply decides there is no God, and he lives without God, and he lives his life and makes his decisions. But we also recognize that a fool also doesn't recognize the order of the creation. We use the example of standing on the Empire State Building and having seen all the evidence for gravity, denies its existence, and then lives as if it doesn't exist, steps off the Empire State Building, denies its existence all the way down, but we realize there's a point in time in which the realization of what they've denied becomes very real. And that's the pavement below. And so the level here is that the fool is just disregarding and denying God's his existence and his order. He pokes the bear. He does something that is totally contrary to what we recognize as evidence. And he denies it and then lives as if the evidence doesn't exist. We would even see fools today. We would see people making decisions that you go, with all the evidence you have, why would you make that decision? Why would you go that direction? And that's what he has in a fool. Now remember, Solomon is observing the world around him, and he's trying to train his son to be ready, and he's pointing at things that are positive, and he also points out the negatives. Well, there's two more steps downward, if you will, because each of them get a little bit worse. The sluggard. I put a couch potato here just because that might give you an example of kind of what we have.
I'm trying to figure out what's that on the floor.
Let me see. I can't read it.
It's like a book of some kind.
It's a book of some kind. I don't know. It could be the history of sluggardism. I have no idea. Not sure what it is. Okay? So today what I've done is I've given you the passages we're going to look at in your handout rather than the list of them and looking them up. It'll save us a little time, but there's several that we're going to go through, and we're just going to point them out. So now we're going to look at the sluggard. This is a term that Solomon uses. He gives us characteristic traits, kind of who they are, what you can expect from them, and so forth. So we're going to go through that. The first one I want us to look at is Proverbs 26:16. And this is where it shows us that the sluggard thinks he has life figured out. Okay? This sluggard who has denied the existence of God, he's foolish, but he also believes he has life figured out. And it says the sluggard is wiser in his own opinion than seven people who respond with good sense. Okay? So he thinks he's got it figured out. The lazy person thinks he has life all figured out and has chosen the wise course of action, but he is simply lazy. So he chooses to not work, but he thinks it's a wise choice. And even if seven people try to expose to that sluggard, this isn't a good choice, he still thinks, no, I'm smarter than you. This is truly the best choice, okay? And I want to draw your attention to another element, which we can discuss if we need to. But this is not just about laziness in relation to work in life. This is laziness in relation to intellectualism. There's a term we often have heard, maybe you haven't, I've heard it. It's called lazy theology or sloppy theology. And it's basically where an individual might take one passage of Scripture, champion that one passage, and take no time to study its relevance, its context, or in correlation to anything else in Scripture. That would be a lazy approach to my understanding and wisdom and knowledge. And so the sluggard believes he has it all figured out, doesn't listen to wise counsel, thinks he's super wise, but he's merely just simply lazy. And laziness, by the way, is just simply not putting any effort out. I put no effort out. And so in our spiritual life, one of the things we can glean from this as a principle is that in our biblical knowledge and understanding of God's work, we should never be lazy about that. We should never get so lazy that we aren't giving ourselves and our attention to growing and understanding and knowledge. okay? So this step downward is the sluggard. He thinks he's got it all figured out, wiser than others, but he's just simply lazy. And we want to caution against intellectual laziness as well. Next passage we look at is comes out of Proverbs 10:26. It says, like vinegar to the teeth and like smoke to the eyes, so is the sluggard to those who send him. Now, this is a context where, as Solomon looks at it, he's seeing an individual who is choosing somebody who has the traits of being a sluggard and sending them on a task. I send them on a task. They're to send a message. They're to do a task. They're to work. And he correlates it with, it's like vinegar on your teeth or smoke in your eyes. You're flipping pages. Are they out of sync?
It's not in there.
But it's okay. We can write it in.
You can write it in. Somehow it didn't get in there. Okay. You know, I'm not batting 1,000 on these handouts. I'm going to have to work on those. All right? You just appreciate just that there is a handout. Okay. So in this passage, in 10:26, what he's referring to is simply that it's an unpleasant experience. It's an irritating experience. And it hinders progress. So if you rely on a sluggard to do a task, this is what you experience. You become irritated, it's annoying, and it hinders the progress. So this might be an application for us when we look at individuals. He recognizes that when a sluggard is utilized to accomplish a task, it generally becomes vinegar to the teeth or smoke in the eyes. Okay? Let's see if the next one's in your handout. It may not be because there are two per page, so this one may not be.
Nope.
Okay. Here's another one for your input. That page must have got left out. Don't know what happened, but left out. It says, what the sluggard desires will kill him, for his hands have refused to work. The sluggard believes that he's wise in his own eyes, wiser than him. He thinks he's got life figured out. And he literally believes that his path is the right path. He does not connect that his path actually leads to death. And death could be physical death, or it could be a lack of progress. It could be a lack of something being produced. So the idea is that a sluggard has this concept. So the craving itself will not destroy the sluggard, but what will destroy him is what the craving causes him to do or not do. In other words, the craving of the sluggard is to gain without work. His craving is he wants certain things, but he wants it in his way. So he wants to kick back, relax, and just let the good times roll and the money come in. Okay? He does not make the connection between my effort with the outcome. He wants his effort to produce an outcome that it generally wouldn't. Now remember, Solomon is looking at the order of the world, and he recognizes that individuals who work produce something, and those that don't work do not. But he's recognized there's an individual that doesn't want to work, but wants that outcome. Okay? And we could do numerous examples of the student who doesn't want to do the paper, but wants the grade. I will share one example that was quite interesting. It happened in Bev's class in a school in the South. A student who was bright chose not to turn in an assignment, just didn't turn it in. His grade was reduced. The mother came in and asked this, are you ready? You know what he would have done had he turned it in, so give him the grade for what would have happened had he turned it in. Yes.
Yeah, what if that's
well, yeah. At some point, I think Bev and I should collaborate all of our experience and write a book. I think it would be quite interesting to get that. But this is the epitome of, I don't want to do the work, but I want the grade. Okay? So you have that. And the lazy come to ruin because they desire the easy way. And what Solomon is realizing, that even though a sluggard wants this certain outcome, He has looked at the world and observed them and realized it never becomes that. They don't achieve what they want because the craving is to gain it without any work, without any effort. By the way, the use of hands in this reference is the ability of one to act. That's the reason it uses hands. So it's an encompassing thing, is what the sluggard desires will kill him, for his effort, his ability to take action, he's refused to work. He has the ability, but he refuses to put it into action. All right, let's see if this next one, you have this next one, 22:13. All right, we're back on track. Evidently a page got left off, I apologize for that. The sluggard's flimsy excuses. You could probably, some of you in here may have given these in some point in your past, okay? But what he recognizes is that a sluggard comes up with excuses to not work, and he thinks they're valid, and yet they're like, really? And so he uses this. He said, the sluggard has said, there is a lion outside. I will be killed in the middle of the streets. So he gives a reason why he stays in the house rather than go out to work. And even though seven people say, there's no lion out there, he's convinced, no, this is a valid reason. Even though the reason itself does not have merit, it's enough for him to fail to go out to work. So the sluggard chooses to be lazy, and he'll create excuses to not work. Elaborate excuses. And by the way, the idea here is it is a reason that has no merit. Even a simpleton would realize there's no lion outside in the city, but he's afraid of the lion outside. So the sluggard uses absurd excuses to keep from working. And the sluggard probably has convinced himself that he is a realist and not a lazy person. So he's slipped into this thing where he, in his mind, believes, even though seven wise counselors would give him a different opinion, he is believing he is wise, and he thinks to himself, I'm a realist. I'm living my life in the real world, and this is what it should look like. Okay? And then what is the life of a sluggard? When you look at the lifestyle of a sluggard, here's two verses. The sluggard has plunged his hand into the dish. He is too lazy to bring it back to his mouth. Okay? The idea here is the sluggard merely reaching to the bowl is such an effort as to become or feel too weary to bring it even back to eat. Minimal effort, right? Minimal effort. It's almost as if you get this image, the sluggard reaches in and goes, that's all I should have to do. Can you get the rest of it and feed me? So that's his lifestyle. He may start something, but then just the initial start of it, that's all he wants to do. But he still wants the outcome, but that's all he feels like he'd do. The other one is like a door that turns on its hinges, so too a sluggard turns on his bed. Giving this imagery of a door that just moves back and forth, but it goes nowhere. Okay? So like the door to the wall, the sluggard is hinged to his bed. He just wants to sleep the day away. Okay? No effort. Now, I would tell you that if we look at the fool, the fool looks at the order of the world and denies it and doesn't believe in it and doesn't accept it. The sluggard looks at the world and feels no accountability to that order. Okay? You follow me on that? No accountability. I am not under the same rules as everybody else. I don't have to put forth the effort to get what I want. So even the sluggard looking at the world determines that the accountability of my responsibility are different for myself. And I create my own system to which it allows me to remain on the couch, not doing anything, and yet I still hope for the same outcome. But I've slipped so far into my world or my thought process that I actually convince myself I'm a realist while I'm living in this. So there's a sense of denial and a sense of refusal to take any counsel. Yes?
So I've had a couple younger friends that have some of these traits, and it's very hard because you want to help them. Mm-hmm. So you engage at some point to try to, you know, either kick them in the butt or provide some energy to help them overcome some issues, but they kind of default back to, you know, they're not operating in reality. They do create excuses. It's very hard. And you put in 3, 6, 9 months, sometimes a year, not much changes, and eventually you have to take your hands off the wheel, and then you hope the next person. But how do we show grace without enablement? Because this is very, these are people that we love and care about, but it's hard to, I know that's a wide question.
No, but it's a very practical one. I don't know that we could answer it easily. I would give you two principles that I would think. If I look at Proverbs, Proverbs tends to say that any effort by a wise person into either any of these three conditions, the fool, the sluggard, or the scoffer, should expect not a good outcome. He just indicates that that's generally because their mindset is so set in that path that even a conversation of counsel, and by the way, that in the Proverbs, when it talks about correction, it's talking about that verbal, most of the time, it's talking about that wise man coming alongside and trying to convince them through verbal counsel that what they're doing is wrong. And it generally says that that goes bad, okay? Generally says that goes bad. So what is our role or responsibility? And that would be my second thing. I think we are called to live appropriately and speak the truth in love. We cannot manufacture the outcome. We cannot manufacture the results. Our responsibility is to speak the truth in love. But we often only credit our success by what we see as an outcome in the other individual. The success for a believer is not the outcome. The success for a believer is honestly living your life before the Lord, speaking the truth, and moving as the Spirit gives you insight and wisdom. And I will tell you, I believe there are times the Spirit will say, stop. Stop. If we've raised our children, one of the gracious, loving things we can do is allow them to suffer and live in the consequences of their choice. Because there are individuals that we would come across that is only the hardship of their choices that will truly get them to turn from where they're headed. And when we intervene and remove the consequences, we enable that individual to continue in the path that we don't want because they don't receive the true consequence. And this is where wisdom, the spiritual guidance for us today with the Holy Spirit indwelling us to give us guidance as to what is the proper response. Continuing to love and care, but allowing the consequences to run their course because that's what generally will draw an individual back. Now, Proverbs, I will tell you, Proverbs does not encourage us in that because it tends to identify these individuals as not turning. That they're set in their ways, and even if you attempt, you're going to see in a minute in one of these, even if you attempt to give wise counsel, they're going to turn around and insult you. So you get the exact opposite of what you're hoping to gain. The last thing I would say is this. We are still accountable to continue to express kindness and goodness, to speak the truth in love. I don't want you to take what I'm saying in Proverbs to all of a sudden say, oh, thank goodness, I don't have to deal with, I'll just walk away from them. I don't even talk to them anymore. I'll separate. You're going to come across these individuals if you live for the Lord in the world. You're going to meet these, and a grace kind answer is what you do, but you cannot generate the outcome that you want. You can merely invest by planting seeds, and hopefully the Spirit will convict the heart.
So he asked a complicated question, and it would take a long time to answer, but I just want to add like a summary. Accountability has to come into the picture.
Mm-hmm.
There's a man that I knew that wanted a job and didn't have a job, and his life would be better if he had a job. So I gave him a list of 20 places to call and get a job. And then he called me back and he said, oh, I'm never going to get a job. Nobody's going to hire me. Da-da-da-da-da. And I said, well, how many of the people on the list did you call? And he said, well, I didn't call anybody.
Yeah.
So there comes a point where I have to say, you know what? I've already told you what you need to do. And if you're not going to follow the instruction, I can't help you.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Because some of those people would just eat up all of your time and energy, and until they decide that they want to change.
Yeah. And that's what I encourage you in. The Holy Spirit is going to guide you in that. Praying for these individuals, allowing the Spirit to give you wisdom as how to direct and respond is critical in that regard. So that's the sluggard. And I wanted to give the overall that the sluggard just ignores the natural consequences of life, creates their own system, and they don't believe they're accountable to that order, and they live outside of it. And they just think being lazy and not working, I can still gain what I want. Okay? And then we move to the scoffer. The scoffer is at the bottom because not only because has he not denied the existence of God, does he not feel that he's accountable to the order, but now he mocks and scoffs at those who trust in God and who believe in that order. Okay? So it's a progression downward that you not only embrace these negative philosophies, these negative concepts, you not only embrace them, but now you mock those that embrace the good qualities. You scoff at them. You scoff at the righteous. You mock the righteous for what they do. It is as if the scoffer is saying, I am not the fool. You are the fool to believe in a God. Mm-hmm. They try to invert what is there, the truth. Okay? So in Proverbs 1:22, and this is right out of the chute of his treatise in wisdom, how long will you simpletons love naivete? How long have mockers delighted in mockery? And how long will fools hate knowledge? So you kind of have the fool, the sluggard, the mocker here. The term scoffer and mocker comes from a root which means to scorn or mock or to speak indirectly. They are cynical and defiant free thinkers who ridicule the righteous and all for which they stand. Okay? So that's the mocker, that's the scoffer. Another element of that is a proud and arrogant person whose name is scoffer acts with overbearing pride. The trademarks of a scoffer are pride and arrogance. Okay? So while the sluggard may believe in himself, the scoffer not only believes in himself, but he has such a high level of pride, he's arrogant about everything that he holds true, what he believes to be true. He's got an arrogance about him. The illustration here is just as water in a boiling pot will boil over, so the presumption person oversteps the boundaries. A mocker does not recognize proper boundaries in the order of things, and his mockery will go over those boundaries. Simply put, God exists, he has set boundaries, and the mocker will go over those boundaries and call them wrong. And he will mock them, okay? Haughty is another element. It's to be or show oneself to be presumptuous or arrogant. So a scoffer is presumptuous on their opinion. They believe it's right. They're arrogant that no one else has the truth but them. It's in direct conflict with what God has revealed to be true. So they not only believe it, but then they point at those who believe in the truth and they mock them for that belief.
Oh, I have an example. When I first moved in this neighborhood, my daughter and neighbor's daughter became friends and whatever. And she came to me saying about a little situation between the girls. And I said that I would pray about it. And I heard from the other neighbors that she kind of laughed at that. She said all Arlene said was she would pray about it, you know. But later she came to Bible study.
Did she? So mocking the idea of praying for something, or that there is even a God that could
have done something
better than pray. Praying is.
You know, as I process all of this, I'm thinking of how important the Word of God is in our daily life,
mm-hmm.
because that's the source of all truth.
Mm-hmm.
And these people, like the scoffer, based on life experiences that they've had, they come to certain core beliefs of life that aren't true, but they don't know that they're not true because they base it on experience and what those around them say and not what the Word says. And so they continue to act out on that and then suffer the consequences of it. And even as believers, we can fall prey to that if we don't know what the Word says.
Right. Very true. And the idea of arrogance for a scoffer mocker, we have examples of that today that we could point to. And I'm not picking one side of the political argument or not, okay? I'm not doing that. But what we can see today is that anything stated by the other side is wrong. The merits of what is said is not critical. It's the source. If that source makes a statement, then it's wrong. I cannot accept anything from that source. And you can take that to a scoffer mocker. What they're doing is anything that God says, okay, immediately it's wrong. I'm going to defend my position. And it's not so much the merit of what is said, it's the source. They've denied God's existence, and now they're so adamant and arrogant that anything that comes from God, they're going to deny and stand against and call anyone who sides with that foolish. They are going to create a mailing list of businesses who believe in God, and they're going to send it out to everybody and say, don't support those businesses. That's what the scoffer does.
Rob, the person that came to my mind, and I think this is far enough in the past that it's not political today, but it's Madeleine Murray O'Hare, for those who remember her. Mm-hmm. And I'm reading a book by David Horowitz that's about an attack, and he's an agnostic Jew, and yet he's written a really good book called Dark Agenda about attacks on Christianity today. Mm-hmm. So he goes back and he talks about her lawsuit against Bible reading in the Baltimore public schools, which made it to the Supreme Court, and she won, and there's been a whole line of bad cases ever since driving religion out of the schools, and what do we have now? School shootings. But anyway, her personal life was a raging disaster. Mm-hmm. It was just horrific. And yet, she attacked Christianity with zeal. Mm-hmm. And her son later became a Christian. I think he's still living. But anyway, I thought of her. I thought, yeah, here's someone who attacked God, and she reaped the bitterest of harvests, yeah, in her personal life.
And that's the character trait of a scoffer mocker, is that the essence of who God is not only not accepted, but I'm arrogant, presumptuous, and I attack it, and I mock those who believe in it. Okay? Went too far. Proverbs 3:34, we have God's treatment of scoffers. Now, this is interesting because we don't have a correlation of this with any other element except the scoffer. And God's treatment of a scoffer, it says, with arrogant scoffers he is scornful, yet he shows favor to the humble. The scoffer is the one that is going to receive the exact same treatment from God that they are giving to God. Okay? He will mock those who mock him. You know, I've used that phrase before, God will not be mocked. You will not find in sin what you enter sin to find. The system of God's creation follows his laws and his order. And you cannot, as a non-created, you're a created being, but you are not the creator, you cannot change his order. You can live against it, but you can't change it. And his order will win out, okay? And I'll add this. God's mercy is seen by the fact that he doesn't smash every mocker immediately when they become a mocker. That's mercy. It's forbearance in hopes that they will hear the news and turn. Even though in Proverbs you don't get the sense that they will, there is still a gracious and loving God who gives time and hope that men will come to the realization. And his system, let's not forget, his system is the natural consequences of a mocker are not good. And that is what God's system is trying to get them to turn and change from their ways. But like the sluggard, they think they're intellectually correct, and they believe that they are realist. They're ignoring the consequences. But God's hope, by his design, is I'll give you time. You can keep living that way. But there is a point when they will meet the concrete as well. Okay? The cynical unrighteous are treated by God as unrighteous cynics. Okay? All right, so the scoffer has that waiting for him, and his relationship with God is that God will mock their position. Okay? Now, man's expectation of scoffers, and this comes to us. You're going to be living, scoffers are going to be around, mockers are going to be around you. So what does the proverb say? What is our experience as we engage and interact with mockers? Well, Proverbs 9:7 says, whoever corrects a mocker is asking for an insult. And again, this comes back to what was mentioned earlier. How do we work with a mocker? Well, the natural course of things, as Solomon looked at the world, he saw a righteous man counseling a scoffer, and the righteous man was insulted. So that's kind of our inner, that's what we probably should anticipate. By the way, if you ever encounter a scoffer and mocker, and your words cut them to the quick and they change, don't take credit for that. That wasn't you.
Yeah.
That wasn't you. The Spirit may have used your words, but don't let pride, because that's not the normal response. If you get a scoffer and mocker to respond to your words, you need to go, just like you did, praise the Lord, a miracle has just occurred.
Yeah.
Okay? All right, do not reprove a mocker or he will hate you. Reprove a wise person and he will love you. Anyone trying this on these types of people would be inviting trouble. The idea of counseling a scoffer and mocker, you're inviting trouble. Okay? How many of us were our hearts truly changed through an argument? More times than not, when we get in an argument of words, do we not dig our heels in, and do we not try to prove our point? Because an argument is not the common ground where minds and hearts are changed. They are changed through actions of love and compassion. So we hold on to that. 13:1 says, a wise son accepts his father's discipline, but a scoffer has never listened to rebuke. Okay? There is a pattern in a scoffer's life of not listening to good advice. A scoffer does not become a scoffer overnight. A scoffer is recognized for a pattern of non-listening, a pattern of refusing to accept advice, a pattern of rejecting good counsel. That's a scoffer. So in our experiences, this kind of gives us an idea of what Solomon sees. You know, as righteous people, when we encounter mockers, we should expect insults, hatred, and not listening to what we say. Scoffers can't find wisdom. Wisdom is the skillful application of God's truth, and scoffers cannot find wisdom. It says the scorner sought wisdom, there was none. But understanding was easy for the discerning person. The key here is he is intellectually arrogant and he lacks serious interest. The idea is that the scoffer wants wisdom, but he doesn't want it under God's design. He really lacks true interest in the wisdom. It is not the wisdom, that wisdom was not available. Instead, the point of view of the person is characterized by derision and scoffing, so they believed it wasn't there. They're refusing to accept it, so they say it's not there. So wisdom is available, but the attitude and the way a scoffer approaches wisdom, they won't find it.
Denial,
but also if you think about a scoffer, they are so grounded and rooted in their arrogance that the only way they're going to accept wisdom if it is defined by them. They're not allowing themselves to be molded by God's wisdom. They want God's wisdom to be molded to themselves. Scoffer's wages, and I'm not sure that's a great phrase, but the idea is, you know, when you work for something, you gain the wages of what you work for. So the idea is, what is a scoffer going to gain, or what do we experience from what scoffers invest their time and energy into? And this is the thing it shows. Scornful people inflame a city, but those who are wise turn away wrath. So we've got the scornful, these scoffers, these mockers, they inflame a city. A foolish scheme is sin, and the scorner is an abomination to people. Drive out the scorner, and contention will leave. Strife and insults will cease. It takes the scorner and attaches all these negative elements that within the community, if there are scorners and mockers and scoffers, the community experiences certain things. And it's saying to remove these scorners, they happen to be the catalyst for the negative element that you have. In other words, it ceases strife. They can't be changed by counsel or discipline, so you drive them out. Solomon's counsel to his son is within his kingdom, if he gets a scoffer or mocker, is to not allow them any access to create derision, to inflame things. He literally counsels his son, drive them out of the city. This describes evil people who flout all morality and goodness. Sooner or later, the public will have had enough of them. Even mankind, not God alone, but even mankind, when a person is flouts immorality, flouts their own, the people will finally have had enough of it. They'll finally say, enough is enough. And then inflame situations and make them worse. The scoffer is the one who, where there, the image you've got here is there is an ongoing counsel, advice going on within the environment. People are trying to figure it out, and somebody raises this contentious component that starts getting the group frustrated. Instead of seeing a normal good outcome, it starts seeing this downward spiral into anxiety. It's the scoffer that does that. It's the mocker. I would say that if you were in a meeting and there was a conflict that you were trying to come to a solution, and the normal people there are really seeking a good outcome, it is the scoffer that will create personal insults, make outrageous statements, which will divide the group, and all of a sudden you have an inflamed situation. So whatever situation you are engaged in trying to correct, it is the scoffer and mocker that's going to inflame that and make it worse than it started out. That's the character trait of the scoffer and the mocker.
Application, please.
Application. Proverbs is one, and I'll ask you to give application as well. Proverbs is giving us insight into the world that we live in. I think Proverbs is giving us an indication of three individuals that you are going to come in contact with. You will in contact with a fool, you'll be in contact with a sluggard, and you'll be in contact with scoffers and mockers. If we take the Proverbs principle, we realize there are normal outcomes of individuals of that type. The counsel to us, and I would say this, is recognize what the scriptures tell us are the natural outcomes of those individuals and live accordingly with those individuals in your world. Mm-hmm. And so for a mocker, realize your counsel will not change the heart. It is of no value to argue with a scoffer. To pray for them, mm-hmm, and to look for opportunities maybe to speak the truth, but the scoffer, according to this, what he's talking about, that scoffer, the only benefit with the sluggard, the scoffer, and the fool is the discipline that is applied to them will cause the simple and the naive to learn. But they, in turn, won't turn from their ways. The New Testament gives us this idea that the Spirit's work in the heart is what will change. But generally speaking, studying this and looking at life, the mocker very, very seldom becomes a believer. Unless you're like C.S. Lewis, who said he came kicking and screaming across the line to faith. But that was not because of anyone. That was because the Lord was working in his heart and changing his heart. Right?
Kind of a wide-ranging application that, as I've seen the intensity of political correctness kick up, especially when you get into election seasons, you know, and I'm an outright conservative, but friends saying, oh, if you wore a red hat, I wouldn't hang out with you. Even if it wasn't a Trump hat, just a red hat. And I find that I'm someone that's willing to discuss differences or just sit at a table and kick ideas around, but with the rise of the intensity of political correctness to even silence Christians, especially on our beliefs, because that's what it's really aimed at, drawing God out of schools, mm-hmm, out of court buildings, out of everything. I find that a lot of people who are so super duper PC are also the scoffer type. They just mock our religion, they mock us. But I've seen a lot of Christians who are afraid of that. And I think we don't have to be afraid of that. We have God on our side. We're not trying to draw into an argument and fight and go head to head Monday Night Football with them, but we can say, hey, I just believe this and speak truth in love. But don't be afraid to speak, because I see a lot of my colleagues who are afraid to speak. And then we lose more of our voice. You know? So I think there is a wide-ranging application. You got to know when you're up against a scoffer, speak truth and love, and then just leave it.
Yeah.
It's okay.
On the Sermon on the Mount, Christ commands us to live our life in such a way that the unrighteous will look at us and say, and I'm paraphrasing in my own words, they will look at us and say, there's something different about them. There must be a God. Mm-hmm. The idea is that we are the living example of Christ in us. That's what we're to be. And our example is to what is to call the world. We live in such a way that is in such contrast to the world that even the world looks and goes, there's something different there. Because it says, live in such a way that they will see your good works and they will glorify God in heaven. The idea is your works point to the Father. And by doing that, by the way you live, by doing that, you will win some. They will recognize that God exists.
Does this suggest that all those things I've been seeing lately, those ads on the side, how to shut down your atheist professor in 30 seconds, is probably a bunch of malarkey? Yeah.
Yes. And I would tell you from real life experience, two things. I'll make it three. Two things. Three. We'll see how many come out. We'll go from there. First off, an argument with an atheist in my mind, I always win.
That's right.
Okay? A controlled environment in which you put the words of the atheist as the objection. In other words, I am making the statement that the atheist will say. I can organize a paper, a writing, that will actually lead to the exact outcome I want. The problem is, that is not real life. That is not real life. I'll give you one example. Oh, I've run out of time. I have to hold on to it. Or do you want to hear it?
Yeah.
You want to hear it?
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, hold that thought. When I was working construction, I don't know if I told you this, when I worked in construction, I worked with a Mormon, a guy that was a Mormon. The bottom line and the basic faith of a Mormon is you will be, if you follow their eternal progression, is you'll become a god of your own world. It's all a progression, it's all by works, and if you do everything correct, you will have a god of your own world, you'll have your spirit wives, that's why they believe in polygamy, spirit wives that will have spirit children, and you'll populate your own world, and you get to set up the rules in your world. We happen to be living in a world where of a god who was once a man just like us, who lived it all right, and he now has his own world, okay? So I get in this basket, and we're up about 35 feet in the air, and we're working, and I've got this great argument. I've got one. And it's still, it's a great argument. The outcome wasn't quite what I expected, but it was a good argument. I ask him, I'm in the basket, and I said, I just have one question. If you guys believe that you will become the god of your own world, and in the Garden of Eden, Satan said to Adam and Eve, if you eat the fruit, you will become like God. How is it that Mormonism and Satan are saying the same thing? The conversation ended. He didn't want to talk anymore.
Yeah.
I lost the connection. Okay? But I thought, this is one that will drive a Mormon to their knees. And they'll go, oh my gosh, you're right. I'm going to give up Mormonism. Yeah. Yeah. So, but it was just, in real life, I don't think you should expect. You still speak that truth. I believe you do. I believe you expose the fallacies. I believe you say it in love. I believe that is our charge. That is our goal. But it is the Spirit that's going to do the work in the heart. And believe me, a scoffer is listed as one whose heart is hard.
Yes.
It is a hard heart that believes in themselves for whatever reason and rejects the existence of God.